Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Viscount's Widowed Lady by Maggie Anderson, narrated by Elizabeth Brooke. Prologue. London, Mayfair, late November, 1819. Lady Althea Brookwood stood beside her brother, Frederick Perkins, and his wife Elizabeth, as they watched Althea's Mayfair townhouse emptied of its contents. Her belongings were to be moved to a rented property in a less attractive part of town. "I must say my poor opinion of Brookwood has been justified," Freddy said gloomily. "And Brookwood's heir seems no better. Has he offered you the dower house?" "No, but he did allow me to remain here until he sold his other property. But now he has need of it himself." She saw no point in telling Freddy that Brookwood's heir had taken a set against her and charged her rent. Freddy was a farmer. He didn't understand the ways of the ton. It would only worry him. "But will his lordship not help you further?" Lizzie asked, her eyes filling with tears. Althea hugged her sister-in-law. "You two must not worry. I shall manage. I look forward to it." Althea tried to make it sound as if she embarked on a new adventure. In a way it was true. To shed herself of any connection to Brookwood was a great relief. "You must come and live with us," Elizabeth stated. Although Althea loved to visit their farm in Dorset and their brood of children, she would never consider living with them. The children would be pushed out of their bedroom to make way for her, and the small village would buzz with gossip. No, she had lived the life of a lady, despite the awful manner in which Brookwood had treated her, and she had no desire to return to the country. "You are sweet to offer, Lizzie, and I greatly appreciate it, but I still own Owltree Cottage." "But for how long?" Freddy asked, his mouth turning down at the corners. "I'm not sure a woman should live alone in London. It's a den of iniquity. The ton can behave very badly if Brookwood is any example." "Brookwood died 2 years ago, Freddy. I have managed." "Yes, but your finances are dwindling, and now you've lost your home. How will you manage?" "I didn't lose it," she said with a smile. "Brookwood's heir inherited the property. I've no need of such a grand house. I shall manage perfectly well on my stipend. Growing up a farmer's daughter, I learned how to be frugal. And if I must, I'll leave London and live full-time at Owltree." She frowned. "The cottage was bequeathed to me. It never belonged to Brookwood. They can't take that. They'll have to kill me first." "You might marry again," Lizzie said hopefully. "You're awfully pretty, Althea, and still young." The prospect turned Althea's blood cold. "I don't wish to, Lizzie, but if worse comes to worst, I'll become a companion to Aunt Catherine." "Oh, yes, that's an excellent idea," Freddy said with obvious relief. "You will live in comfort and be safe. Aunt Catherine has invited me to stay for Christmas." Althea had no intention of moving in permanently with her strong-minded aunt, but it served to stop her brother worrying about her. She held out her arms. "Let us go and wait for the furniture to arrive. My servants will be there. I shall turn this new house into a home in no time." Chapter 1. County Wicklow, Ireland, January 1820. Kieran Flynn, 4th Viscount Mountsimon, reined in his horse and stared ahead at Greystone's Manor. His father was dead, the malevolent force of his nature gone from the house. Perhaps now a loving family would fill the empty rooms. He eased his stiff shoulders. Some other family, not his. Let the cursed Mountsimon name die out with him. In the depths of winter, heavy clouds hung low over the house, a blunted, dark shape stark against the sky, like a blemish on the beautiful land it occupied. With a sigh, which was half exhaustion, Flynn nudged the flank of his bay. He rode up to the house and dismounted. Blackened stone glistened wet in the misty air, the mullioned windows, blank eyes, gazing inward to shadowy corridors and empty rooms. A grizzle-headed groom hurried from the stables. Flynn nodded. "Gaffney, isn't it?"
"You be the young master, Lord Mountsimon. I remember ye," Gaffney said, and led the horse away.
Flynn crossed the south lawn to the shallow set of stone steps leading to a pair of solid, brass-studded doors. The family crest sat above it, gold and green, a knight's helmet, a stag, and a boar. From the top step he turned to view the meadows, stretching away to the east, where cliffs descended to the sea. Despite the lack of a breeze to carry the salty spray, he tasted it on his tongue. Memories came uninvited of his boyhood, climbing those cliffs above the thrashing waves in search of birds' eggs. He had quit this place and his father as soon as he was old enough to make his way in England. Flynn had believed he'd turned his back on his Irish roots, but found they ran deep to his very marrow. Almost against his will, his pulse quickened at the sight of the fertile land. Now all this was his, every brown trout in the stream, every deer in the forest, and every square of stone rising above him. Annoyed by his unforeseen emotion, he reminded himself that his future lay in England, where he would return as soon as he settled matters long overdue. He'd raked up enough blunt to have repairs done, and would seek a good tenant. The door flew open. A wizened male servant, dressed all in black, with a smudge of dirt on his cheek, stood beaming at him. "Welcome home, my lord." "Thank you." Flynn didn't know the fellow from Adam. The butler had died of old age some years ago. He stepped inside the oak-panelled great hall and caught his breath at the memory of it, decked out with flowers for a ball when he was a lad. The buzz of excitement in the air that not even his father's vicious temper failed to dispel. Flynn had watched from the stairs as his mother danced with Timothy Keneally, a ringlet of violets in her fair hair matching her gown, and a month later, she was gone. He returned swiftly to the present, faced with the grayed and dusty timbers, the odour of damp pervading the air. "What's your name? You weren't here when I came last." "Quinn, my lord, your father engaged me just a few months before he died." Flynn handed him his hat, gloves, and greatcoat. The small man was younger and spryer than he had first thought. "You might tell me what servants I have here. Clammy and stiff from riding all the way from Dublin, he was in need of a hot bath, if one might be had." The man's narrow face split into a goblin smile. "You might call me the General Dog's Body. There's old Mainan, who helps about the place, out chopping wood while the rain holds off he is. And Gaffney, you would have met at the stables. The cook is Mrs. Shannon. We have only one maid at present, and that's Maeve." "One maid?" Flynn paused in the act of unbuttoning his expensive riding coat, lovingly stitched by a Bond Street tailor, while envisioning the state of the bedchamber he was to sleep in. "We weren't sure when you would arrive, to be sure, my lord," Quinn said. "But I've set Maeve to work upstairs for ye. I've given the drawing room a good set to. There's whiskey, and a fire's been lit." "Most welcome," Flynn smiled. "I suspect you of having the andaholic?" Quinn nodded, his eyes serious. "I believe I have been gifted with the second sight, my lord." The oak staircase, with its grotesque Mars carved in the banister, had given Flynn nightmares when he was small. Halfway up it, he paused. "Send the groom with a note for the estate manager, will you?" he called down. "I wish to go over the books with him in the morning, the gamekeeper too." "It will be done, my lord." His mother's portrait hung on the wall in the drawing room. Flynn wondered why his father had placed it here, when she might reproach him every day of his life. Perhaps to spite her, and ban her from her place amongst their ancestors in the great hall. The room was sadly depleted of furniture. The most valuable items had evidently been sold before his father died. He supposed the massive, heavily carved pieces that remained were unfashionable. Shabby damask covered the bank of windows, hiding a splendid vista of the sea. He crossed quickly and pulled them open, sending a cloud of dust mites to ride the air, only to find the view obscured by dirty panes and fading light. Disappointed and chilled to his bones, he went to stand closer to the inglenook stone fireplace and placed his butted foot on the fender. The fire was well ablaze, a welcome circle of light and warmth in an otherwise depressing room. Quinn came in and piled more peat on the fire, which burned steadily with a dull glow. "Mrs. Shannon has one of her tasty stews on the stove. Goes down a treat with a mug of Guinness, if you don't mind me saying, my lord." "I'll have that whiskey now, Quinn." Flynn sat on the shabby brown leather wing chair by the fire, his father's. With a grimace, he ran his fingers over the holes in the arms, caused by his father's cigars. His father had probably been drunk more often than not, and tormented by the past. It was surprising that the whole pile hadn't gone up in smoke. He stretched his legs toward the warmth. Well, he knew coming home would be difficult.
The next morning, a messenger rode up to the door to deliver a missive. Flynn read it over his coffee in the unappealing breakfast room, its only redeeming feature, the view through the window. He threw it down and stood. "I must return to England in a few days, Quinn." "Yes, my lord." "King George has died." Quinn bowed his head. "Ah, so England has a new king, my lord."
"The Prince of Wales is to be crowned King George the Fourth,"
Flynn said soberly, rubbing the back of his neck. He expected King George to make outlandish demands, and Flynn to be the likely recipient. He must not forget that one harsh word from the king could destroy his career and send him back to this lonely place filled with bitter memories.
London, February. Mrs. Maxwell's ball, despite being held so early in the season, was crammed with guests who all appeared to be talking at once. Althea Brookwood sat with Aunt Catherine while the musicians enjoyed a break. 2 years have passed since Brookwood died. Her aunt compressed her lips.
I am aware of it, aunt. How could she not be?
You should consider marrying again.
Neither Aunt Catherine's conversation nor her purpose had changed from the last time they met. Althea's answer remained the same as well.
I have no wish to.
Her aunt's violet blue eyes regarded her.
I know Brookwood was a devil. I heard the rumours. I thought it was good riddance when he died in that duel.
Aunt Catherine didn't know the half of it. Brookwood's obvious dissatisfaction with her had been a torment from the very beginning. Now she was free and determined to stay that way. No man would ever hold sway over her again, bending her to his will. She patted her aunt's gloved hand.
I know you care, aunt, and I'm most grateful. Did Brookwood leave you well provided for?
My dower allows me to live quite comfortably.
If she was careful, she'd learn that skill as it had been necessary to economize with a tight-fisted husband.
Aunt Catherine frowned, and she touched the brilliance at her throat.
I lost some of my finest jewels in that spate of robberies 2 years back. When your uncle died, the bulk of the estates was lost to entail, but you will inherit all that I have. I'd like to know to whom I'm leaving my money before I die. Not another bounder like Brookwood.
Althea kissed her aunt's soft cheek. Have no fear, I shan't make that mistake. I had no say in my marriage to Brookwood. Father arranged it. The possibility of being at the mercy of another like him made her stomach flip over.
Lord Ingleby has recently been widowed. He's shown a considerable interest in you, and he's plump in the pocket. Won't be after my money.
I shouldn't think anyone would be so foolish, Aunt Catherine. You are in excellent health and will be with us for many years to come.
Never mind sweet-talking me, Aunt Catherine continued undaunted. A woman does better in this world with a husband. Why not Ingleby?
He was another man with more than a touch of violence about him. It was in his eyes and the tight way he held himself.
Althea recognized the signs and suppressed a shiver.
I don't find him attractive.
Attractive? That's of little importance. We are talking about a husband, not a lover.
Her aunt's husband had died some years ago. A generous, quiet man, a good deal older than Catherine. She studied her aunt, whom she was said to favour. Catherine was still resting in a gros de Naples gown of deep violet, the colour of her eyes, which had not dimmed. Might she have taken a lover at some point?
Althea dismissed the idea immediately. There had never been a whiff of scandal attached to her.
You can't say the Irishman Mont-Simon isn't attractive, Aunt Catherine said, nodding to where he moved through the crowd, a head taller than most around him.
Althea turned in his direction.
Yes, he is, and a rake. Lord Mont-Simon was part of the king's immoral court.
Some woman will tame him. Rakes make the best husbands once they settle down.
If they settle down, Althea said with a laugh. Wasn't it Samuel Richardson who disputed the idea of a reformed rake making the best husband? According to him, it was a false and inconsiderate notion.
Pooh, Aunt Catherine said rudely. You have simply no idea how to enjoy life, child.
Althea did not add that Mont-Simon had attempted to woo her into his bed. Since she had been widowed, many men pursued her. Widows were seen as fair game. Men assumed she was dying of frustration. She supposed she was an oddity. Younger widows often remarried after a year of mourning.
Others found suitable arrangements outside marriage. Her treatment since she'd been widowed had shattered her confidence. After her marriage ended as brutally as it began, she enjoyed her freedom and wished for neither husband nor lover, but still came under criticism. Ladies with roving husbands glowered at her while their husbands made discreet advances. Aunt Catherine motioned with her fan. "Have you noticed the way Mont-Simon looks at you? If you play your cards right, you'll be the one to tame him, my dear. Well worth the effort, I'll wager." "How do you suppose I do that?" she asked, surprised by her curiosity. She had a vision of taking a whip to a panther and almost giggled. "You allow him to hope you will invite him into your bed, and you play him like a salmon on a hook. For a clever woman like you, that shouldn't be too difficult." "It sounds downright dishonest, aunt." "Don't be so naive. Look around you. The ton thrives on deceitfulness and game-playing, and you will deliver on that promise eventually. Not to do so would be unsporting, and gazing at Mont-Simon, I would consider it foolish." Her aunt's cheeks flushed, and she vigorously applied her fan. "At first, let him get to know you. Let him begin to want more from you than merely someone to warm his bed. When he can't live without you, then..." Althea gasped. Perhaps she misjudged her relative. "Aunt," her aunt laughed, "you're surprised. I knew you to be wise, but I never expected you to be capable of such..." Failing to find a polite word, she fell silent. "Cunning?" Her aunt snapped her fan shut and smiled like a cat caught climbing the dovecot, no doubt pleased to have stunned her. "You are of my blood, and just as smart yourself. You just need practice." She gazed over Althea's shoulder and opened her fan to cover her mouth. "Mont-Simon comes to ask you to dance. I would advise you not to shun him. It would be bad ton and such a dreadful waste." To refuse Mont-Simon would be wrong when she'd been dancing earlier. He advanced on her, decidedly panther-like, through the crush. Could she keep a man such as him on a loose leash? He had all the charm of the Irish in his soft burr and the looks to go with it, a kind of loose-limbed grace and elegance. Althea flicked her fan, refusing to ogle him like the women around her, including, she feared, her aunt. Only when a pair of darkly clad legs of supreme length and shape stood before her did she look up. His unusual, smoky grey eyes held a spark of humour. She admitted to not being entirely resistant to his elan, which she suspected came as easily to him as breathing. Humour was attractive in a man. That was why she'd been avoiding him. But there was no avoiding him now. He bowed over her aunt's hand, and then hers. "Might I have the pleasure of this dance, Lady Brookwood?" His eyes held a gleam which defied her to refuse, as she had snubbed him in the past. She had to admire his persistence. She nodded with a polite but distant smile. "Yes, my lord." If he were surprised she'd accepted him so readily, he had the grace not to show it. Leading her onto the floor, he clasped a hand at her waist as the musicians began to play. Althea marvelled that in spite of his long list of lovers, no serious scandal had attached itself to him. In the ladies' withdrawing room, women did talk, but only praise and regret had reached her ears. Silver-tongued, he bewitched them. The Irish were known for it. She needed to develop some sort of armour against him, for they met often during the season. She'd become a challenge, she suspected, for few women would refuse him, and she'd quite deliberately done so. To keep a grip on her emotions, she settled her gaze on the surrounding dancers and imagined she danced with the king, who held no attraction for her. It proved to be difficult. Mont-Simon's shoulder felt hard beneath her gloved hand. She gazed at his wide chest, encased in a silver waistcoat. He was lean, but she guessed his body would be strong. Her eyes drifted downward. She felt her cheeks heat. Aunt Catherine had lowered the standard of her thoughts. When she looked up again, the invitation in his grey eyes almost robbed her of breath. A smile lurked on his handsome mouth. "You don't wish to talk, Lady Brookwood?" He swept her expertly around the floor. "The last time we danced, you took exception to something about me. Was it the management of my neckcloth, perhaps? Or is it my dancing which displeases you?" "Not at all, my lord. I'm a trifle breathless," she said as he deftly turned them. "You dance extremely well," as she supposed he did most things. An accomplished partner makes a man look good.
You are too gracious. His hand holding her gloved one tightened, settling her closer.
Too gracious? Would you prefer me not to be? I am of a versatile nature. I can be whatever you wish.
She glanced up through her lashes. I am gratified, my lord, that you desire to please me.
You have only to tell me what it is you wish of me, he said, his tone persuasive, while his eyes held a wicked twinkle.
The music ended, and couples began to leave the floor. Unaccountably hot, she rested her hand on his arm. My wish is for you to return me to my aunt, my lord. How smug he looked. She would love to take men like him down a peg or two. She would never embark on such a scheme as her aunt suggested. It was too devious, even though she liked few men, and as for rakes, they deserved all they got.
Ah, Lady Brookwood, you disappoint me. Here I was thinking there was more to you than being content with the quiet life you appear to lead.
He offered her his arm as they joined the rest to leave the floor.
I sensed a desire for adventure, romance. I'm sure I glimpsed it in your lovely eyes.
She rested her gloved fingers lightly on his silk-clad arm. I am most concerned for your sight, Lord Mountsimon. Perhaps a physician, she said crisply, annoyed by his assumption that she had nothing in her life. It would appear dull to such as him, she supposed, but that was how she preferred it. He grinned, and the glance he gave her caused her to lose her breath.
You look as pretty as a garden tonight in that gown, adorned with roses and bluebells. But a man might be in danger of being stung by a wasp if he ventures too close.
You have the right of it, Lord Mountsimon. He chuckled as he deposited her with her aunt. Without further ado, he bowed and left them. Well? Aunt Catherine leaned toward her.
Well, what?
Did you arrange an assignation? Althea took her fan and waved it before her hot face. Of course not. It would be most improper.
Silly girl, do stop that action with your fan. It looks like you are swatting at insects. You have missed an opportunity.
I declare you wish to live vicariously through me, aunt. Her aunt snorted. A widow must make her way in the world. He talks now to Maria Broadstairs. See how she laughs with him, and how elegantly she employs her fan.
It's common knowledge that the Duchess adores her husband. She merely likes to flirt.
Her aunt's eyebrows rose. Have you never enjoyed a light-hearted dalliance? Althea sighed. It would be dishonest of me to encourage anyone when I am not in the least interested in them.
Flirting is one of the few enjoyable pastimes a woman can participate in without censure.
Aunt Catherine shook her head despairingly. I believe you need lessons, Althea. Althea shook her head at her aunt with a bemused smile, excused herself, and went to speak to good friends Hetty, the vivacious red-headed wife of Baron Fortescue, and Sibella, the smart, dark-haired beauty who married John, the Marquis of Strathairn, 2 years ago.
I watched Lord Mountsimon approach you, Hetty said with a grin. He had a very determined look in his eye.
Althea shook her head, refusing to be drawn. She was aware that her friends wanted to see her marry again. He dances well.
Althea, Sibella's green eyes danced. Is that all you can say about the man practically every woman in the room is ogling?
She laughed. Even I could admit that apart from John and Guy, of course, he really is one of the most handsome men in the town.
And charming, Hetty said.
And rather nice as well, Sibella added.
He is a rake and part of the king's set, Althea said. He wastes his time pursuing me.
What a shame, Hetty said with a sigh.
Indeed, Sibella agreed. Althea laughed. You shall not turn my head, ladies. Tell me, how are your delightful children?
Chapter 2 At first, Flynn had believed Lady Brookwood would welcome his advances, but it now seemed there was little hope of her doing so. He hadn't yet found the reception warm enough for him to broach the matter of a liaison. If she refused him, manners would require him to desist. He wondered why her indifference bothered him, as he nodded to Miss Rutherford, who cast him an arch, come-hither smile. Wise to move on to where the reception was warmer, but he found it difficult to do so. Althea's crisp wit and beautiful violet-blue eyes both intrigued and aroused him. He roamed the length of the ballroom and pushed his way through the crowd gathered around King George.
The king beckoned from where he slouched on a high-backed gilt chair. He dressed in the colour of mourning, while at the same time upholding his aesthetic sensibilities with the liberal addition of gold braid and buttons. "Your Majesty," Flynn sank into a low bow. The rotund king nodded impatiently. "We had little time to speak at my father's funeral, Mont-Simon. Did your visit to Ireland go well?" "It did, thank you." Flynn had failed to find a tenant for the house, but saw no point in mentioning it. "Excellent. Then you have no need to visit again for some time." He beckoned Flynn closer. "Alterations to the pavilion go splendidly. John Nash's stables are a tour de force." Flynn steeled his mouth where a smile threatened. He had just read Hazlitt's comment in his travel notes. The king's horses, if they were horses of taste, would petition against such irrational a lodging. King George wiped his cheeks, then employed the monogram silk handkerchief to shoo his lackeys away. He said in a low voice, "Come to Carlton House tomorrow at 2. We would have words with you." "Certainly, Your Majesty. Might I inquire as to the reason?" "Tomorrow," the king snapped. Patently aware of the king's ability to abandon political principles and forget friends with barely a backward glance as he had Beau Brummel, Flynn bowed. "Your Majesty." Flynn made his way over to Guy, Baron Fortescue, where he stood within a circle of men. They turned to greet him.
"Mont-Simon, you might wish to take up Alvany's bet at White's," Guy said. "It concerns who among the dandies' latest fashion disasters would Brummel most condemn. Peter Sham's trousers or Mildmay's coat?"
Mont-Simon chuckled.
"Of equal fortune, I fear."
Seated nearby with three lovely ladies, Guy's wife, Horatia, chatted with Althea Brookwood, and John's wife, Lady Sibella. It was Althea that drew his eye. With her fair hair swept up in the latest fashion, she had the most graceful neck he had ever seen. He studied the widow's shapely form with regret, as he wondered what King George wished to discuss with him. George had looked unhealthy for some time, but in the hot ballroom he was perspiring heavily, his sweat-drenched hair curling around a pallid forehead, his fleshy cheeks flushed. Worse than that, he appeared to have developed a nervous tic. It might be the result of criticism for the huge debts he incurred while lavishing money on the Brighton Pavilion, but more likely it was fear that his wife, Caroline, who he refused to acknowledge as queen, planned to return to England and insist on attending his coronation as his consort. Whatever it was, Flynn felt sure George expected him to solve it. Did he think Flynn had the wisdom of Solomon? Slough, Buckinghamshire. Alone again, after spending Christmas with her Aunt Catherine, Althea breathed in the fresh country air, with a hope that a spell away from London would revitalize her senses. The hackney coach entered the busy market town of Slough. She enjoyed Aunt Catherine's company, but of late she seemed determined to see Althea married. "I don't wish you to spend your life alone," she said more than once, "with no children to brighten your old age." Her aunt's marriage had been happy, but no children had resulted from it. Althea sympathized with her, which made it impossible to dissuade her aunt from her view, and she wasn't about to reveal the appalling truth of her marriage to Brookwood. Althea gazed out the window and winced, fearing she'd made a poor companion. She couldn't recall the last time she'd had a good laugh. Her melancholy was like a steel weight she seemed unable to shrug off. Owltree Cottage would make her feel better. It always did. Ahead, a stagecoach sounded its horn, blasting its arrival through the air, before halting outside the Crown Inn. Travellers from Bath alighted. While fresh horses were led from the stables, passengers travelling to London hurried from the porch of the inn to take their seats, clutching bundles and bandboxes. Althea's carriage continued past the butcher's shop on the corner, and passing the greystone church, climbed the hill, leaving the Malay behind, entering a peaceful country lane edged on one side by forest. A mile further on, the hackney slowed and turned into the circular driveway at Owltree Cottage. As her tense limbs unwound, Althea viewed the country house she had inherited years ago, which had become the secure, quiet base she needed. It was too modest a dwelling to interest her late husband, who had ignored its existence for years. In the month before Brookwood died, however, he'd struck fear into Althea when he'd come there twice in the space of a few weeks. Altree Cottage had been built 400 years ago.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?